Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight I have a horrifying story about this VHS board game, and a group of friends have an overnight sleepover watching horror movies and playing this game, and some crazy and wild things happen. Now, I remember a game similar to this back in the day that my mom had when I was a kid and I wasn't allowed to play it. It was called Nightmare. If you remember it, let me know in the comments below, and let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. We met once a month. It was always a Friday at our house. My younger brother Davey and I started a horror club with my two best friends, Jeff and Brad. We talked our parents into letting us have the club on a Friday night of every month, where we would inhale a few bags of chips, a couple bottles of Coke and Sprite, and watch three or four horror flicks. We had also go over horror comics we read, the occasional horror board game or two, anything and everything horror related. We were obsessed. The typical Friday would go that Mom and Dad would pick the four of us up from school and take us directly to Rogers or Blockbuster to go through the vast sections of VHSs to rent, though we had spent the whole time in the horror section. There was a deal for five rentals for the weekend, so our parents would get one choice and we'd get four for the night. We'd watch one before dinner, then three in a row after. Davey and I shared a room with a bunk bed and had a TV and VCR in it. So Jeff and Brad would sleep on the floor on Mom's yoga mats, and we'd try to stay up all night. But we'd all usually be out cold by 1 a.m. Stacy, our older sister, always came home around that time. I could hear her lame boyfriend Craig's car engine from several blocks away. Sometimes she'd come in and try to scare us. Once, she got Craig to climb up the side of the house and bang on the windows with the gnarling mask on. That sent us. I was usually the last one awake, and I'd stay awake, thinking about all the crazy stories and monsters we had watched. I'd rate them against one another on their scariness. If there were any snacks left, I'd finish them in bed up on my bunk, while looking back over the covers of the movies we had rented. The next morning, we had all had breakfast, and talked about the different flicks we had watched, and maybe rewatch the last one we had fallen asleep to. Brad and Jeff's parents would pick them both up before lunch, and everyone's lives would return to normal, and I'd be left waiting for the next month to come. This horror club Friday finally came, and with it, Jeff had a surprise for us. But first, the video store. We rented Creepshow 2, Fright Night, The Blob, the 80s one, and Tremors. I'd seen Tremors and Creepshow 2, but Brad and Jeff hadn't, and they were pretty fun movies, so we agreed on them. We started with those two, before moving on The Blob, which none of us had seen, but all immediately loved. It was now 10:30, and Jeff was ready to break out his surprise. We had all wondered what it was, sitting in a large garbage bag in the corner the entirety of the night. Jeff explained he was out with his mom at an old boutique-style bookstore, filled with antiques and ancient film reels, records, and a small VHS section. He scanned through the VHS, hoping for some horrors but only found old classics. There was one, though, in a plastic case with a homemade label. It sat on a large rectangular box the size of a board game, which was what it turned out to be. When Jeff told us, we all got super excited. We had heard of VHS board games like Nightmare and Atmosphere, but hadn't ever seen one or played it. Even though this one looked to be completely homemade, it had some frightening artwork on the cover. And when we opened the box to see the actual game, it was as thick as a cutting board, and just as heavy. The board game was covered in zigzagging pathways, all stemming from the corner of the board and arriving in the center, where a pop-up structure of a cabin was marked with the word, Home. since it was a four-player game. Each corner of the board had a starting place, and we each got a figurine token for a playing piece. Each piece was small and metal in a shape of a child, with the paint and colors smeared and faded. Each child's mouth was open in a scream. The four corners were all different, from a graveyard to a forest to a haunted mansion to a slaughterhouse. The objective of the game seemed to be for each of us to get to the middle of the board, or home, from whatever frightening origin point we started from. A simple four-sided die with the number 1 through 3 pushed you forward, while the fourth side would send you one step back. Every path moved through other paths, like a maze, and interacted with its origin point surroundings. Whether it was a path through the forest leading to the dead end or a hallway in a slaughterhouse into a meat locker, you had to pay attention to your path because of the other element of the game. While your player was trying to get home, there was an additional figurine that moved on its own across the board trying to catch you. I read the back of the box, and it sounded like the inner workings of the board were filled with gears similar to a watch. They were powered by negative and positive magnets, which were the individual pieces and board, and charged up whenever they were near each other. The villain figure must be more attracted magnetically to certain other figures, which would make the choosing of our pieces all the more important. But how could I tell? The VHS came into play, acting as a sort of hour-long timer counting down. If you didn't get home before the timer ran out, you were locked out, but you wouldn't be alone. The figurine that chased the players was in the shape of a dark-cloaked man with long, stringy hair. As far as the board game tokens go, he was the scariest one I had ever seen. I didn't even want to look at him, which made the VHS that much more unsettling. That stringy-haired man filled the screen, which was half-covered by shadows. You could only really see parts of the side of his face, and his eyes, which were white as milk. When he spoke, it sounded like glass breaking. He introduced himself as the Harvester of Souls, and looked forward to getting to know ours. The Harvester welcomed us to the game, which was called Don't Look Behind You. He instructed us to take our places on the board as the timer was about to begin. It glowed in red at the bottom of the screen. 1 hour. We had 1 hour to get to the center of the board. We took turns with the die, each rolling and making our first moves. Brad started. He was in the dark forest. Then it was Jeff, who was in the graveyard. Then Davey, who was at the slaughterhouse. And me, who landed on the haunted mansion. My first roll brought me 3 places forward, and the closest to home. My token was in a curving hallway leading towards a staircase to the first floor. Then the Harvester's piece moved 3 places. It was going towards Brad in the forest. We all oohed and awed at the untouched token. The Harvester spoke through the TV, asking if the player was afraid of forests. Brad, caught off guard, looked at us and shrugged. The Harvester said he was about to be. Brad rolled again, a 3. He landed on a card pickup. He nervously turned the card over and found an image of the young boy that was on his token. The boy was walking through the dark forest on a slim, barely lit path. The Harvester was amongst the shadows, half his face lit by moonlight sprinkled through the trees. But his face, what we could see of it, wasn't that silky porcelain. It was bark-like, rotted wood. But his eyes were still white and glaring at the boy. At the bottom of the card, the words, "Don't look behind you," were written. Down on the board, we realized the Harvester's token had moved. It was now leading towards Brad. Brad got angry, though he felt more scared than anything. Brad stared at the card. I could see how uneasy it made him. He looked over his shoulder, checking behind him. Jeff called him out on it, and we all laughed. Then it was Jeff's turn. His token was walking down a path between the graves, but landed on an empty one, which meant he lost a turn. Then it was Davy, and he was making his way through the bleeding out room from the slaughterhouse. We continued on through turns, with each of us making our ways through the frightening locations. The harvester was on the screen the whole time, staring down at us, watching. It really felt like he was. The one eye we could see seemed to track whoever was playing. I could even detect a smile here and there when one of us would choose to go left instead of right down a fork in the pathway. The harvester's token caught Brad in the darkest part of the forest. As it did, his voice came over the screen, announcing Brad was no longer in the game. Brad sat back in a huff. "What a gip." His token tipped over. Jeff was the next one to land on the card pickup. To get through the graveyard, he had to walk through the mausoleum and landed on a bad square. The card showed Jeff's token walking through the halls of the mausoleum. One coffin had been pulled out of the wall, its lid opened. The harvester was peeking out from inside, half his face hidden by shadow. The visible half had been zombified, rotting and grotesque. At the bottom of the card, again, the words, "Don't look behind you," were written. Suddenly, Brad pointed behind Jeff and screamed. Jeff spun, panicking to see. But nothing was there. Brad was just pranking him. Jeff had turned, though, and looked. Down on the board, the harvester's piece was now turning towards Jeff. Within two turns, Jeff's token had been caught, and that frightening voice came over the TV again. He was no longer in the game. It was just Davy and I now. I was nearing the front door of the haunted house, and Davy was almost out of the slaughterhouse. We were coming from opposite ends of the board, and almost in the safety of the home finish point. The harvester's next turn brought his token between mine and Davy's. He could reach one of us. The other would likely make it home, but one wouldn't. He decided to turn towards my little brothers. Davy rolled, and landed on the final card pickup before the front steps of home. He lifted the card and stared at the image. It was his token, the little boy, walking through the slaughterhouse. Behind him, the harvester had a chainmetal apron on. He carried a large electric bone saw in his hands. He was covered in blood. His one visible milky wide eye was aimed at the little boy in the image. And with that, the harvester's token was right behind my brothers. The voice whispered out from the screen, "Don't look behind you." Davy screamed, spinning around and staring up at the TV. The harvester was looking down at him. A crooked smile formed. My dad knocked on the door, scaring us all even further. He told us it was time to go to bed. Davy snapped off the TV, vanishing the harvester's face from our visions just as he was beginning to outright laugh. We all decided to call it a night. We turned off the lights and I climbed up onto my bunk. Davy was already under his covers, only his face poking out. He didn't look okay. Jeff packed the game up and put it away. Then him and Brad turned into their sleeping bags. The room was pitch black. All I could hear was four sets of hushed breathing. Everyone was still scared. I could tell they were all thinking about the game. It really was creepy, and some of the things the harvester said felt personalized. I know Davy had a fear of slaughterhouses. He had seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in one of our first club meetings, and he still hadn't recovered. I also know Jeff hated graveyards because of his grandpa's funeral, and Brad hated forests because he had gotten lost during a childhood camping trip. We were all scared of plenty of things, though. I knew I was just trying to scare myself now, and tried to think of the movies we had watched. But my mind kept inserting the harvester's face and voice into my memories. Everything kept leading back to him. Then I got really nervous. I remembered one time when Brad had brought over a Ouija board for the club. It was kind of fun. I didn't really believe in it, but wanted to. I was thinking about the one rule Brad had made clear we needed to follow when we finished playing the Ouija board. When we were done, we had to end the conversation. My mind took that rule and ran with what we had just played. We never finished the game. I rolled over, looking out of my window now. The wind was picking up and causing the light from the street lamps to flicker against the glass. My eyes picked up a shape, a human shape, in the shadows of our next-door neighbor's hedges. I saw a sliver of that porcelain skin. Then it was gone. Was that him? Had I seen the harvester? Stop it. You're scaring yourself. Just go to bed. I rolled onto my back and shut my eyes. I felt like this was going to be a long night. I finally drifted off. The sleep was restless, filled with nightmares of long hallways with many doors, all darkened by the silhouette of the harvester. In my last dream, the static fuzz that accompanied the end of the VHS finishing its recording drifted in. Then I was awake in bed, laying on my back. I could hear the TV fuzz clearly. Someone had been watching something. I rolled onto my side and looked down. The TV was that static fuzz, but I saw Davy's foot, his Freddy Krueger-themed socks, pulled through the TV screen. My heart stopped and I shot back in bed. I was pressed into the top corner of my room, unable to see the screen. I didn't want to. Had I just seen what I thought I had seen? Was that actually his foot? I knew I saw his sock, but had it really been pulled through the screen? I gathered my courage and crawled back to the edge of my bunk and looked down. Jeff and Brad's sleeping bags were empty. Between them, the board game was set up. All the pieces were placed where we'd left off. I was so scared to look down and see what was in my brother's bed. Disturbing visions of the harvester, stringy hair, long gangly arms wrapped around Davy, was all I could think of. But I peeked under. His bed was empty too. I was the only one in the room. I climbed the ladder down from my bunk and inspected the board. The pieces were in the same place, but they were different. They didn't look like random little boys anymore. They looked like Brad, like Jeff, like Davy, like me. We were all there. I reached out to pick up my piece, but felt a shock spark through me. The room got really bright, and I realized the TV was now inches from my nose. And the next second, I felt my body passing through something like a flurry of snow. Then a late November wind rushed overhead. It got dark. My face was pressed into dirt. I was cold. I got up, feeling four walls of dirt around me. My eyes adjusted and I realized I was in an empty grave. It was about 6 feet high, but I could reach the top and pull myself up. I looked out and saw I was in the graveyard from the game. The same mausoleum sat in the distance. The one Jeff didn't make it through. Oh my God. I was in the game. I leaned against the wall of the grave, wondering how this could all be. What was I doing here? Then it hit me. Jeff was here somewhere, in the mausoleum. If I could find him, maybe that was how I'd get out. Or maybe I'd be led into a trap. Either way, I didn't want to wait in the graveyard any longer. I climbed out. The grave beside me had a hole dug up through the center, like something had pulled itself out. The gravestone said, Harvester, 1691 to blank. I thought back to Jeff in the graveyard. While playing, his character picked up a key in the rose bushes near the entrance of the mausoleum. It's what allowed him to go inside and try to leave the property. I needed that key. I set off across the graveyard, while moving between the stones and shadows taunting me. I felt like I was being watched from every angle, silhouettes of the harvester peeking out from behind tombs. I made my way towards the garden on the side of the mausoleum. It took me a few minutes of nervous searching, but I found the bronze key with the skull for the bow, sticking up from the soil like a flower. I unlocked the back door of the mausoleum and entered. Slivers of moonlight highlighted the edges of hundreds, maybe thousands of sealed coffins in the walls. The mausoleum all of a sudden seemed so much bigger inside. Crying echoed through the endless halls. It sounded like Jeff. I hoped it was. I followed the crying. It led me down several hallways before I heard it coming from the walls. I checked one of the seals and saw it had Jeff's name written on it. I pulled the handle and yanked the coffin out. There was thudding coming from inside, and the lid bursted open, Jeff screaming and gasping for air. He hugged me when he saw me, and I helped him out of the coffin. He was shaking uncontrollably, and said the harvester had taken him and pulled him through the TV. The next thing he knew, he was stuck in that coffin. He was crying far too loudly, and the sounds were echoing through the halls. I quieted him down and told him we needed to get out of the front door. We moved through our aisle, then another. Finally, we were back into the main hall. I saw the front door, way down at the other end. We rushed towards it. Somewhere behind us, the harvester screamed out,
"Don't look behind you!"
I felt Jeff's body shift to turn back, but I yanked him forward and told him to keep staring straight ahead. We kept running. The voice screamed out again, this time closer. We kept running and got to the entrance as the words bellowed behind us. We bursted through the door and slammed it shut. Nothing followed. No banging on the door or screaming. Silence. We turned around to see we were now facing a wall of tall, dark trees. It was the forest Brad didn't make it through. We could barely see 5 feet into the woods. It was just too dark. How the hell were we supposed to make it in there? Then Jeff remembered that there was a flashlight near the entrance to the woods. At the beginning of the game, Brad rolled a 2 and missed getting it by 1 digit. We could avoid that in person. There was the entrance, a few yards to the left, that led onto a path that disappeared a few feet in. We jogged over to it and found the flashlight sticking up from the bushes. It worked and gave us a large window of vision through the woods. We moved down the path, which was barely that. It was only about 1 foot wide and filled with gnarled roots and branches. We had no idea how we were going to find Brad, but he was lost in the darkest part of the woods, so that's where we were headed. Jeff and I got to what we felt like was the middle of the forest. It was pitch black all around us. I stopped Jeff and turned off the light. It was like our eye sockets were cut. Everything went black. Then I heard crying. Brad's. I turned the flashlight back on, and we followed the crying. It got closer, but so did the sounds of twigs breaking somewhere behind us. I reminded Jeff not to look back, no matter what. Finally, my flashlight hit Brad. He was wrapped up in vines, which we had to break to get apart to get him free. The twigs behind us kept breaking. We got Brad up and moving, and I hustled them down the path. I had no idea where I was leading them, but hoped it would be wherever my little brother was. A scream echoed through the forest. It was the harvester, saying he was coming to get us, and to turn around and see. I yelled not to listen to him and to keep running. The voice kept yelling, getting closer and closer. We could feel his cold breath on our necks. Then we all fell forward, and we slid across a slick tiled floor. We were all immediately soaked in a foul mix of innards and blood. We were in the slaughterhouse, in what appeared to be a spare parts room, or maybe it was for bleeding out. All I could see was the million shades of red covering the walls and floor, and my best friend's pale, sickly faces in the mist. Bone saws of all kinds screeched out, echoing through the vast warehouse from the not-so-distant room. I could hear Davy's whimpers under them. I put my hand down to lift myself up and found it pushing against the stomach of what appeared to be a pig. Vomit rose in my throat. As I was pulling my hand out, I felt my hand grip onto something hard and handle-like. It was a large knife. I remembered back to Davy's plane, and just missing landing on a square with the blade he would have picked up. I threw up anyways, but held the knife tight. Jeff and Brad got up with me, and we peeked out the doorway. The hallway looked to be never-ending, impossibly far into the distance, and lined with doorways. It was filled with small piles of body parts of animals and people. I saw the upper torso and head of a woman resting atop a body of a hog at the peak of one mound. The bone saws continued to screech out. It was almost unbearable, but I kept hearing Davy's low screams and yells under them. I rushed down the hallway, trying to follow the sounds. Brad and Jeff were several steps behind, clutching each other the way I did with the knife held in front of me. The screams got closer, but so did the bone saws.
"Don't look behind you!"
echoed out above them. It felt like they were going to be the next room we passed, but I saw Davy instead. He was locked in a rectangular cage at the bottom of a pile of loose body parts. I rushed into the room, inspecting the lock to get my brother out. The key. I pulled it out and found it fit the lock perfectly. The cage snapped open, but as it did, the floor under it gave out. Davy and the large pile of bloody extremities fell, dropping 10 feet and landing in what appeared to be... Oh no. They landed in a living room. The floor was old wood, rotting. The deterioration of a long-abandoned house. I had been in it only once before, but I knew it well. It was the old Wagner's house, and was said to be haunted. I had been dared to go inside and retrieve a photograph from the master bedroom upstairs. The only way in was through the basement window that hadn't been barred and boarded up. So that's where I started. I'd gone through the basement, up and through the first floor living room, and to the staircase. The second floor, I didn't make it past the hallway. As I was walking to the master bedroom, the attic door hatch popped open, and the ladder leading up slid down. I turned and ran back downstairs and out through the basement. I never got the photograph and lost the dare. Now here I was, looking into the same living room, Jeff screaming behind me. The harvester was here. His voice shrieked into the room.
"Don't look behind you!"
I kept my eyes forward, grabbing Brad and Jeff and pulling them over the lid of the cage. We fell into the living room floor of the Wagner's house. I looked up and saw the harvester leaning over the cage. He pulled himself over to jump down onto us, but it all disappeared and became the ceiling of the living room. His voice echoed down at us, repeating those same four words. It all happened so fast. I didn't realize I was laying right beside Davy. He didn't either. So when I grabbed him and we locked eyes, tears overwhelmed us. I knew we didn't have much time, though, so I picked us up and rushed Jeff and Brad to the basement staircase. We sprinted down into the dark cellar, squeezing between a massive ancient furnace and the wall. The window was just on the other side. It was a tight fit, but I led us through to the... Oh no, the window. The window was gone. It was all wall now. We were trapped. A metal screech came from inside the furnace. It sounded like a series of sharp blades scraping across metal. We were going to die down here, the four of us, trapped like rats. Wait, no. There was another way out. I remembered it from the first time I saw the house. At the very top, under the highest arch, there was an attic window that was empty of glass or a frame. It led out onto a roof that could be easily enough to climb down. We just had to go up the stairs to the drop-down staircase. The one that sent me running from the house a year ago. That was it. That was the way out. We would have to go up to it. The metallic scraping got louder. I yelled for the boys to go back upstairs. We squeezed back out as the furnace started to rumble. Heat began emitting from it, and the screeches got louder.
"Don't look behind you."
We kept moving and got back up to the staircase to the living room. We rushed back over to the pile of the body parts slipping through the blood-soaked wood. I was leaning with Davy's hand held tightly in mine, but I slowed down as we reached the second-floor hallway. It was empty, quiet, and dark. The drop-down door was closed. Shoot. We'd have to lift each other up to pull it down. I led the boys forward. Then, from the bottom of the stairs, the harvester's words yelled up,
"Don't look behind you!"
Our necks stiffened again, trying to contain the natural urge to turn. We continued on. Suddenly, the drop-down door swung open and the ladder shot down. We all fell into each other, collapsing backwards. As we did, I looked up into the small rectangular doorway in the ceiling. Light from a window streaked across it. There it was, our way out. I pulled Davy up and yelled for Brad and Jeff to hold on tight. We formed a chain and climbed up the ladder into the vast attic. I could see the open window at the far end. It was still there. Davy tripped and pulled me down with him. My grip let out on the knife and it skittered forward, Jeff grabbing it quickly, and him and Brad sprinted for the window. I got Davy up and made chase. Behind us, I could hear something large shambling up the drop-down ladder. It made me run faster. Brad and Jeff climbed out the window and reached in for us. I pulled Davy with me, but we both went through the window at the same time. I felt a cold hand wrap around my ankle. I looked down and saw the harvester's face glowing in the dark. His other hand was wrapped around Davy's ankle. He had both of us. He was pulling, yanking us back into the darkness of the attic. Davy's grip was loosening on the window, and I knew he wasn't going to last any longer. I let go of the window and slid into the attic, knocking the harvester's grip from Davy's ankle. I yelled for them to run. The harvester landed on top of me, his stringy hair blocking out any light from the window. He leaned down, opening his mouth to bite, when a sliver of metal slashed through the air. The harvester fell back, the handle of the knife sticking out of his neck. I felt three sets of hands gripping my shoulders and yanking me through the window. Brad, Jeff, and Davy, they saved me. I stood up outside and looked at the other side of the street. I could see home. The windows glowed outward warmly. It felt so different than the rest of this world. We rushed out along the roof to the edge of the rotted shingles. One at a time, we climbed down the pipe to land on the grass. Jeff, Brad, Davy. My eyes were focused on the window. I kept waiting to see the harvester's face appear, him climbing out after us. But he didn't. It was my turn to climb down, and my eyes never left the roof. As I was halfway down, I heard the front door of the house slam shut. Oh no, he was outside. I threw the key down to Jeff and yelled for them to run. I jumped the remaining 5 feet and took off across the street. From my peripherals, I could see the harvester was near, but I didn't dare look back. I ran hard but felt him gaining behind me with every step, that cold breath hitting the back of my neck. Jeff and Brad were inside home now, and Davy was just entering. They were all waiting for me. I heard the harvester's voice whispering over my shoulder,
Don't look behind you. I'm right here. I'm right here.
I kept running up the front walk and to the door. I never looked back. The front door slammed shut behind me and cut off the harvester's voice. I shot up in bed. We all did. I was on the top bunk. Davy was back on the bottom bunk, and Jeff and Brad were in their sleeping bags. We all had the same knowing and horrified expression. No one said anything, but we all knew. The harvester was on the TV. The timer was just ticking down to zero. His voice creaked out from the screen, disappointed, saying we had survived the game and to come back any time, if we dared. But to remember, don't look behind you. The TV went the static fuzz again. It stopped, then started to self-rewind. I jumped down from the bed and ejected the tape. I pulled all the film out and tore it to shreds. We packed the board game back up and snuck out to the garage, where we grabbed a can of kerosene and some matches. We took the board game out to a park nearby and lit it on fire in the empty public pool. We left it burning there. The next morning, we all played it off like it was a bad dream, even though Brad no longer had the large board game he had shown up with. Him and Jeff left before lunch, and Davy and I agreed we didn't want to watch TV in our room anymore, so we got rid of it. We now unplugged the one in the downstairs living room every night. We've postponed the horror club indefinitely, and Davy and I are rethinking of trying out baseball cards.